DubLab.
I'm in conversation today with musical artists Jay Lynn and Kame Iowa, who releases music as More Mother. Both are prolific self-taught extraordinaires of production and DIY values who make complex, textured, and nuanced sonic works. Kame Iowa, also More Mother, goes by More Mother, is a national and international touring musician, poet, and visual artist and workshop facilitator based in Philadelphia, who has performed at numerous festivals, colleges, galleries, and museums around the world, sharing the stage with luminaries of music and literature such as King Britt, Roscoe Mitchell, Claudia Rankine, and bell hooks. Kame is also vocalist in three collaborative performance groups, Irreversible Entanglements, More Jewelry, and 700 Bliss. Jay Lynn is an electronic music producer from Gary, Indiana, whose music explores unheard rhythms, placing her in a category of her own. Aside from releasing three full-length albums since 2015, Jay Lynn has shared the stage or collaborated with artists such as Bjork, Ben Frost, and William Basinski. Additionally, she has ventured into contemporary dance, composing music for Wayne McGregor's autobiography, which premiered in 2017. So thank you both so much for joining me. The premise of this talk has been around the LP and the publication that Unsound has released called Intermission. And I wanted to maybe start with that, because you know, intermission is it's a time to take pause, it's a break, it's also like a time in between. And both of you contributed musical pieces and literary works. Kame, you contributed a poem for the publication, and I just wanted to find out from both of you. When you were asked to participate in this project, how did the concept of intermission guide your contributions? And Jay Lynn, maybe we can start with you.
Okay. Seeing as we were in a forced intermission, I think I can safely say that most of artists, we were, you know, the world was in a forced intermission for last year. So for me, it was very, when I was asked to create the piece for Unsound, I was already kind of in a place of like everything of my whole year had, of course, like many, come to a complete halt. So, and then originally, the piece was, I was drawing up the piece as it was, and then we were waiting for Sophie to come in and see what she could, you know, like what first if she even liked it, and then she did, so then it went from there. It was just, you know, and then the crazy part was, of course, like right after that, you know, Sophie passed, but I don't like to talk about Sophie in a past tense way. So it was just a lot. it was a lot. Like it was a lot happening at once, honestly.
Did you and Sophie come up with this project together? Like were you both already collaborating on this piece for this particular project of intermission? Or was this something, a collaboration that came forth beforehand?
No, this came forth for intermission. I had started drawing this up, the piece, and then Sophie just came in, took it, and ran with it. So it was great, you know. It was just, everything with me is so, you know, such a chemistry moment, you know. So that was great that Sophie, she just came in and she was just like, boom, handed it back to me. You know, I loved it. Unsound loved it. And, you know, it was great. Even in the midst of just everything that was going on, you know, with last year.
More Mother, what were your thoughts on how the concept of intermission guided your contribution to the project?
Well, first I would just say, wow, you know, to hear Jalen speak about that is really heavy, you know, especially around, you know, you get a chance to have a commission and, you know, what everyone is going through and you have a chance to collaborate, you know, and that's what I've learned is that this collaboration, especially, you know, during 2020 was just like a real kind of, you know, vulnerable kind of situation, you know? So, yeah, that was a heavy moment for everyone, but it's so beautiful to have this track, you know, that's like, you know, that makes me smile. The fact that it got accomplished and it's, you know, on record forever. My thoughts was really about, I mean, thinking about collaboration again, I had completed this record in 2000, maybe 17 for Vinyl Factory for the CTM festival. And it just never got released on, you know, because it was just a commission vinyl record, but it never got released in streaming. And I did a beautiful collaboration with an artist named Gang out of New York. So I was just speaking and just wanting to bring that back, you know, because some of the same themes that I was talking about, you know, were showing its ugly head, you know, speaking about police brutality outright, you know, state-sanctioned murder, you know. Yeah, so it was really more about a resurrection for me of an old piece. And the piece was very poetic, you know. So I wanted to have the text to go along with it. And it worked out great.
Jalen, did you get a chance to listen to Kame's recording as well as read her piece?
Of course.
I'd love to get your thoughts on it. Like, I would love to hear you both just kind of comment on each other's pieces, as you already did, Kame, a bit on Jalen's piece.
Kame, sis, for me, is such a just brilliant being on the whole front anyway. And then when I, you know, Kame so always so forward, not just in her writing, but just as a person, like, when I read the words, because I know her, I could feel everything. You know, like I remember the first time I was in New York and I watched Kame perform, was probably one of the most powerful performances I've ever seen. Because you feel everything, like Kame makes you feel every fiber of everything that she's saying. So when I read the piece, it resonated with me. So because I can, as a Black woman, I can relate to everything she said, you know, being Black in the United States, being Black in this world, I can totally relate. And it was just so in your face, but so Kame, so in your face. And I love it. I didn't expect anything less, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Yes, the piece is very confrontational, as it should be.
Yes.
And I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much about Kame's works. Yeah, Camille, like, did you have any thoughts on Jay Lynn's piece with Sophie?
Well, to me, the thing with Jay Lynn is that you know they're going to be doing the next wave, you know? So it's really beautiful to have someone be so courageous in their work, you know, because I don't like the word trailblazers. That's so crazy because we're all in this together, you know, but they really take these, like, you know, these risks and walks into, like, I like to call it territory we've never been to, you know, coming up as a Black woman in electronic music. You get all kind of people in your ear, you know, but when you're able to, you know, compose a piece that's uniquely you and not have to change, you know, too much within the, you know, the walls of whatever that commission came from, if that makes sense. You know, so this piece was like, whoa, with Sophie, like, you know, that's a lot of, you know, queer Black women would speak, you know, that's amazing. That's part of the community, you know, and so much in, you know, this industry, you get delusioned about who's who and, you know, who's actually here for, you know, the movement of good music, you know. And I just thought that was a massive link up, you know. Yeah. And I mean, I'm happy to hear how it happened because, like, you know, your mind just goes, you know, how did that happen? Who was, you know, but, you know, you both made a connection. I don't know. I just think that's, like, amazing, you know.
Thank you, sis. Yeah, like, it was unsound. They were like, you know, Gasha and Matt, they're like, you and Sophie really should do this collaboration. I was just like, okay, you know, I was all for it. And it worked, you know. I feel like you get the best out of any artist you collaborate with when everybody can be themselves and everybody's free to be them and no one's trying to micromanage, you know. So it came together, you know, really well. So I was very pleased, you know, with the outcome.
I'd love to ask you both about your kind of your methodology when you're making music. You know, Jay Lynn, I read in a previous interview how you said you kind of approach music like it's math, you know, like where the sound is the answer and you're trying to answer a question. And I would like to, I'd like for you to maybe like, maybe talk about a little bit, like just what kind of questions or problems do you feel like you're tackling through your music?
With musically, I always feel like I always have the answer. I'm given the answer, but I have to find out what the question is. So, which is why I always say I don't have a, like when I, you know, when I sit down in the chair to make something, you know, it's not like a blueprint or I don't have a setup. I have no idea what's going to happen. I am as clueless as the person asking me, you know, what is this going to sound like? And I don't know. And I love that I don't know. That's the best part. I don't know. A lot of people, I think I found that a lot of people, I think in media, like such a definitive answer of this is what you do, this is how you do it. And I'm like, no, I mean, I love that I'm not like that because I don't know. I wake up and I sit down and sometimes I forget, like they're like, yeah, you're an electronic composer. And I'm like, oh, really? You know? And it's people, and I'm sure someone will say that she's not serious about her work. I'm very serious about it. I don't want to control it. I have no desire to control what I do, not in that aspect, because creativity, to box it to me is an abomination. So I don't. I just let it run wild. I just happen to be, you know, blessed with the gift that I have. So for me, when I'm sitting down and I approach a track like, or I approach a piece like it's a math problem, I love mathematics, I do. And for me, it can be complex. Rarely is it seamless, but when it is, it's beautiful. I love those, those moments of happy accidents or, something. If I'm lucky, sometimes I can't make 10 songs in a day. I'm lucky if I get through 4 bars that day. I'll say that in a minute. And that's why I love it. It's just because I'm very intuitive. I'm not technical or in the mechanics of what I do as much as I love the creativity of feeling what I'm doing. Like, that's most important to me. Yeah.
Kameh, you also are employing a methodology of problem solving through your projects, and also very specifically through your project and your I guess theoretical framework of Black quantum futurism. I'd love to know, how did you land upon that praxis, and how does it drive your projects?
So the question is, how does Black quantum futurism drive my projects?
Yes. And also just kind of thinking about how, I feel like you are also tackling problems through your music as well. There's a problem solving sort of aspect.
Well, I guess it's just a lot of things that I care about is, you hear stories. And some stories grab you, if we're speaking about the lyrical part of my music, it's just a bunch of stories, and a bunch of people I admire that I would like to write about, and people that no one knows about. That's always been interested in me, especially people who have fought for liberation for Black people that have gone unnoticed. That's a big deal of the lyrical process. Sonically, it's more of a collection of sounds, but it continues to morph. I mean, right now I have to compose a piece and I'm just what am I going to do? I was just thinking maybe I'll play guitar, So I'm just, it's what's handy, what's ready to be set up, because originally I was going to use my Mellotron, but I can't find my charger, so it's I guess that's not what the piece is going to be, this kind of thing of circumstance. But as far as Black quantum futurism, I mean, that's the lens that, I make my work through. Or I see my work through, or I guess you can say funnel or filter it through. And it's basically these kind of same kind of thing I said before, this kind of collection of sounds, this kind of archive, this buried sounds, this experimentation with sound. What do these notes do? What does this distortion do? It's a lot of experimentation. More like that versus problems being solved, if I don't, in that case, it's did I solve it or did I not solve it? It's more the experimentation out in the world and you see the results, and a lot of my practice involves research, really studying those before me that are not doing what I'm doing, that are really about, passing down our tradition. I'm really into traditional music, especially, traditional Black music or Black classical music in America, definitely shout out to Jalen for continuing to push that, but we have our own classical music, We have it's expansive. And that's what Black quantum futurism is saying. There's no time cut off. It's not this linear time. It's a complete circle. It's always coming back to us. We are rich in sound, And there's a lot of beautiful literature written about the legacies of that sound. you know?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Just the temporality that this framework kind of explores, because it's like, it seems like you're in looking through your website and just some of the works that are coming out of this, like there are art installations, there's, you know, there's research projects. Like I know you were recently awarded a fellowship or an award through the CERN Institute to do research into like the intersections of science and Afrofuturism, which is amazing. But like you're exploring time as like a, you know, as a commodity that gets withheld from Black and Brown women in particular. And I'm really interested in like how you, how some of these workshops that you've been doing, like how you facilitate like reclaiming that time.
Well, we really make connections throughout many cultures about how this concept of Western linear time is not the say all be all, you know? And that's why research is so important, because you can find out things that have been hidden from you. You know, it's not, it just really depends on what you're reading out there and what communities are you reading about or caring about. Because to me, it's very clear how Western linear time, you know, oppresses people of color, you know, particularly Black people, particularly Black women. You know, it's the court systems, it's the prison systems. You know, we in this society, we treat each other like we all have the same time or the same privilege of time. You know, but if you're trying to get to the courthouse, you know, we say this all the time in our workshops, the courthouse is downtown. Who usually lives downtown? You know, say you have children, you have to drop off. And then to get downtown here in Philadelphia, that's two buses. You know what I mean? So it's this kind of squeeze of time when if you're 15 minutes late to court, you can lose what? Your home, you know, your children in some cases. You know, I mean, it's really ridiculous on the many, you know, disturbing stories, you know, that come out to being late to the government. You know, we're right now in a huge housing crisis, you know, and who has that been affecting? Black women majorly, I'm sorry to say, you know, but it's the truth. And it's about looking at these ways all these parts make the system, you know, from the individual level to the industrial level.
Jaylin, you also have kind of commented on time before in your music, like how since you've been making electronic music, and this is something I read, you feel like you can make time and space disappear. Can you talk about that a little bit and just your concept of time through music?
Yeah, I went from, I think, a moment in music where time was mastering me versus me mastering time. And then it got to the point, then after that point, it was like, it just wasn't needed. I didn't have to create inside of a grid anymore. Like, and what I mean by that is just creating, I would say, what some people would say, oh, you're doing it. I would guess in the technicality of, oh, you're doing it correctly versus you're doing it the wrong way. And I stopped worrying about that. And I create because I love to, I have to. One of the things that Kameh just said when she was speaking on not knowing you had like, well, I wouldn't say not knowing, but having privilege, especially in the electronic music field, being a Black woman in the electronic field. You know, it's so funny. I used to get asked these questions all the time, and I would try to blow it off. But the more you do it, the more you feel it. And it's like a lot of times, I mean, even myself having to turn down shows because you're looking at a lineup and it's like all white male. And then you realize you're in the lineup because you're the token, because it's like, let me cover all my bases. She's Black. She's a woman. Can't say I didn't. Yeah. So when I realized things like that were happening, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, I'm like, I can't do this show. You know, it's not right. You know, I don't feel right about it. And I just, Black people just on a whole front, we just get tired of being the token or the afterthought or the innovator and then being stolen from. And then we're past exhaust. And, you know, the being cheated over the musicians, just Black musicians on the whole front. I know this has nothing to do with what you asked me, but mm-hmm. I feel like it needs to be said. Just being cheated for so long. The black people would do so much. And particularly Black people, the original man is due. The original being is due so much. I'll say that. And I'll leave that there. But yeah. Sorry, I had to sisters made me, I had to bring that out.
Yeah, no, this is good. I mean, I think you both engaging with one another is a big, I mean, that's a big part of this conversation. It's not just like me asking questions.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we usually, you know, it's so funny because me and Kameh, usually everything with us is so like we see each other. And usually by the time we see each other when we're out, like we're, you know, we're in another part of the world. We're in Berlin, we're in Poland, you know, we're in some part of the world and we see each other. And usually when we see each other, we're so tired. But, you know, we hold up and we go, we put that performance on. We're exhausted, past exhaust. And we still do it. You know, I know she's there. When I know she's coming, or we're on the same lineup for some event, and I know she's flying in. You know, we always make sure we stop to hug. I don't care if I just knocking on her hotel door for like, and I only got to see her for 5 minutes. You know, it's just, it's important. Like,
definitely. Yeah. And I'm so happy you said that because, you know, the outright thievery.
Yeah.
You know, that we have to deal with publicly and privately.
Yeah.
Because how many, you know, that when people say like, you got to pick and choose your own battles, you know, and I'm like, man, you know?
Yeah. It's heavy.
It's so heavy. And you would think that we would have more spaces to speak about this instead of having it be like a rant. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Because then it's just like, you know, it's so funny. You get on a panel and they're like, yo, dude, can you do this panel? It's like, yeah, you know, do the panel. And then it's like, but after a point, what you realize is you're being patronized is what's happening. Because it's like, but you're not going to do shit about it. Because, you know, you're like, this is just, it's trendy right now. Because why? There's police brutality. Let's have a panel discussion about it. Then to have the unmitigated gall to have a white man or a white woman then ask the people that are being victimized, what can we do? What? You really? What? I mean, you know, it's so funny.
You're right.
You're gonna ask the victim to then also come up with the solution. Yeah, sit on that for a second. I never speak like this. You know, it's so funny. I never talk about I never, this is my first time, like, just kind of letting it out. Like, it's much needed. Cause like I said, we're as a people, we're past exhaust.
I mean, it's due. I emailed my manager today and said, I don't want to be on a panel for at least a year.
Yeah.
And I honestly wrote 2 years, but I was like, am I being too dramatic? You know?
No.
I really had to stop and ask myself, was I being too dramatic?
No.
Because that's exactly what you're saying. It's like, is this the new way to pick artists' brains?
Yeah, it's like,
you know
like,
what I mean?
Yeah, it's
you want
like
me this, to save your festival, your industry?
Let's have a panel discussion, but we're not really going to do anything about the actual issues. We're just going to have a panel discussion because this is trendy to talk about right now. And it's like, it's kind of like it's like a rub on the head. Like, okay, we've talked about it. See, we've covered it. See, ha ha. And then we go back to the same bullshit. So yeah, I'm kind of, the panel discussion thing is very patronizing at this point, to be honest. It's not to say that issues don't need to be discussed. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is when they are being discussed and then you still see the same practice, it's like, yeah, that was straight, Pat. You're placating me now. I get it. Okay. I'm the joke. Ha ha. Yeah.
I mean, clearly there are things that you both are pushing against, you know, but like just in this conversation, even it's like, you know, you're also like allowing yourself to not struggle with certain things any longer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I think you definitely like being home, like having to taking this forced intermission. You have a lot of more time to reflect versus see when you're on tour, you're moving like this.
Right.
So things are happening in the world, but you're like, you're on the next plane. By the time it's like, I heard about this, but I was on a flight when it happened. I was on a flight. I was coming home. I was asleep. I was back on a flight. It was, you know, your life is moving like that. Mm-hmm. Versus now you're sitting still and you're watching life unfold in front of you. And it's like, damn.
And you see a lot of stuff you don't like.
Exactly. You're like, yo, like for real. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, yo, I mean, wait a minute, like, and this and the thing about it is, you know, it's like, you know, it's been happening. It's not that it's like oh my god, this is suddenly a new thing. No, it's just that we have the time to sit down now, and it's like, oh, okay, like, yo, wow. And you feel it so much more because you're sitting still,
I guess. Like, I'm sorry. Were you saying something?
I was just saying definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this kind of takes us to just like creative processes, you know, in the pandemic, right? Like, like how did creative processes shift for both of you? And all, you know, cause like some people expanded, you know, did a lot of like remote collaborations. Maybe some people went like deeply interior. There was also so much space and time, as you both are expressing, you know, that you had like, there was a little bit more like, I guess, privilege of space and time during this moment. Like, I'm curious what approaches, you know, just came up. And like, you know, what will stay with you and maybe what do you want to leave behind?
Since you want to go first, since I just
okay.
went
full. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I've been fortunate to have a little room in my house where I have a studio, you know. So that's been a huge privilege, you know. So basically every day I just woke up and went into the studio. Some days I just sat there. Some days I recorded a lot of things, you know, just try to just keep myself in this space, you know, and, you know, I try to record as much as I could, you know, that was basically all I could do. I was taking walks, you know, and stretching and, you know, being good to my body. And then the winter hit. I was like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? This kind of, you know, I guess they call it the winter blues, but it was more like reality to me, you know, like, okay, now you're not outside as much as you want, you know, you're used to now, you know, so I guess that was just a bit, you know, more of a process for me in the winter. But it's also started thinking about what kind of new boundaries I want to set for myself, you know, when I go out. And just realizing that this kind of thing just, it doesn't stop. I like when Jay said, some days they just do four bars, you know, it's just like, there's so much writing to do. You know, I wrote a poetry book, but I feel like I done used all the poems already. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh my goodness, I have to do so much more. But it's all about that pacing yourself now. You know, making these kind of, like I said, no panels for a year. These kind of like bold proclamations, I guess, but being okay with it, you know, carving out more space, not doing any, you know, lineups that you really don't even see yourself sonically in. Or, you know, I'm not saying that because I love to mix genres, but you know, when you see a lineup that you're in and you're like, what, you know, or, you know, not feeling like you have to do everything. You know, I'm more on the recording side now. You know, and also just watching myself, you know, artists, we meet, first we perform, and then we got to, you know, talk to all these people that are running the show. And then you got people that admire your music, and you got people that just want to corner you to talk about gear. I mean, you got all kinds of characters coming at you, you know, and especially after COVID, you know, I just recently did 3 shows in Chicago, Minneapolis, and Columbia, Missouri. You know, they were all outside and really spacious, but still, I had all these characters, you know, and I wasn't prepared. I had my boundaries, but I didn't do as good as a job as I wanted to. You know, so just trying to be stronger in that sense with this space, you know, how to protect myself more, where I want to be, you know, I guess that's what it was about, you know, focusing more on what I want, you know, versus what people want from me or what I'm supposed to be doing for this career, mm-hmm. you know, because we draw the maps. You know, they're just following, you know, paths that we've already taken, you know, like, you know, as far as music, you know, as Black people, we stretch so deep, you know, so it's just about, you know, there's no pressure, you know, removing that, like Billie Holiday's song or whoever, you know, that all that relieves the pressure. You know, so that's just where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I can relate to, I relate to that. I hear you. Sis, with just, you know, it's like you've realized when you move so much, you kind of lose the navigation of yourself in a sense. It's not that to say you aren't running the show, but it's to say that, are you doing it with full clarity now? You know that, and that changes everything. Mm-hmm. And that's where I am right now. Like, I have full clarity right now, and I love having the full clarity versus we're on this plane. We slept 2 hours. We're back on this plane in sound check, interview, eat, hour and a half nap, back on stage. You know, it can get hectic. And when you are, it's not to say that, you know, I love to perform, but I must say for myself, I love composing over performing any day. That probably sounds bad.
Nah, please.
Yeah, just say, because I do.
Like, people act like they've never been to a show before.
Oh, my God. The thing.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, I know how you feel with this, especially the boundary thing. It's so funny. Like, my mom, before this interview, she's like, how do you keep up that personality? And I'm like, you know, I'm out of practice. Because it's like I think now would be very different. I think this really has changed a lot of people, and I don't like it, whereas it's not that we're putting on it like that, we're putting on an act, but what it is that when your career, you're so trained how to do a thing, and it's not that anybody trains you and said, this is how you do it. Maybe some people, not for me speaking, no. But I think sometimes people forget that we're human and we get tired and we get, you know, we get tired, we're hungry, we have feelings. And it's, you're just kind of like, it becomes a state of like, you know, you're just this performance machine, or you're just this, you know, you're in an interview about an album that you just released, and then at the end of the interview the person's like, so what's coming out next? Now that is one of my biggest pet peeves, but yes, it's just, you know, everything's like, you know, it's so nice to not be in assembly line mode. It's really nice. And it was so funny, I recently did a performance at the Met Cloisters, and I just, the camera was in my face, and I was like, yes, what am I even supposed to say? But it was nice to feel that way, because normally it's like, I have all the answers, and it was like, no, I don't have any answers. I have no idea. It was like, yes, it felt like somebody dressed me up, put me in front of a camera and said, okay, you're an electronic composer, and go. But it was cool to feel like that, though, because my human side was just really, you know, out there. And it was nice. It was actually, it was funny for me, because it was like, dang, I had to actually step back and laugh at myself. Like, dang, you have no idea what to do. It was nice.
No, I definitely had some, you know, this like, wait, how do I do this? You know?
Yeah, for real.
And even anxiety, because this was my first flight.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm just going to Chicago, but you know what I mean? It was just like, what? So many people, I haven't been around that many people. You
exactly.
know?
Trying to get back into that fold. Exactly.
Yeah. And people trying to give me hugs and stuff like that. And it's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, it's just a hug. You someone's, you know, like you can say no, you know, but it was just more like, whoa, what you do? You know, this kind of, you know, on edge a little bit.
Yeah, because you have to, you really having to ease back in. It's gonna be a process. I think it'll be a process for everybody, because you know, we were so busy trying to grip our sanity last year that, you know, to get a grips of that still, you know, getting grips of it. And now it's like that was pretty much everybody's focus last year, and trying to stay safe, and it was just a lot. So now it's like, oh, you know, we're going back into whatever normalcy is, and it's like, yeah, I'm not prepared for any of this. It's like putting somebody through in a box, shaking it up, and then expecting them to walk straight when they get out. It's like, no, that's not happening. You know,
that's such a good analogy.
Yeah, like we gotta adjust, like for real. Yeah, we gotta adjust.
I really appreciate how you both talking about like this like the imposition of boundaries, like because of the pandemic, just really ultimately has been a gift to both of you to actually feel free to have boundaries where maybe you felt like you couldn't because of how the industry operates.
Yeah,
and realizing how much work we actually did.
Yes,
you know, like I'm like, we not celebrated enough, because not only do we not realize how much work we actually put in, but you know, our fans don't realize it. They're just hopping the show to show. And then like, I saw you here. I saw you there.
Right.
You know, they're not like putting it like, oh my goodness, you've been to every continent. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
or like,
exactly. Yeah, you've hit every continent. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not thinking. And I also was like, you know, so I'm just like show. I'm like, when you think about people who like take a year off, and you're always like, how do they do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you realize, whoa, I could have taken a year off and it would have been okay. You know, this kind of thing of like, you actually don't have to do all that. You've done so much. You know what I mean? Like, you can take this break and your work has provided this space. But I couldn't see that space at first, you know?
No, me either. I remember in 2017, I mean, you know, because I know I'm looking at the time, but no, like in 2017, I was on the road for 10 months, you know, and I was coming home for days at a time, not like, you know, oh, I'm here for, you know, 2 weeks, three, like I'm here for 3 days. I'm back out. Like I'm on a flight to like Berlin. I'm on a flight to, you know, to Greece. Like it was like that. And then that's when that year happened, I was just gone at that point. And that was also the year, I was so happy to see my mom when she came for when Autobiography premiered and she came to London. Like it felt like she had brought home with her. And when she left, I remember crying in my room because I had performance right after, you know, like I had to unsound right after that. And it was just like, man, I was just like, yo, like I gotta get home. That's all I felt at that time. I was so tired. And you know, nobody knows because you know, you put on a performance, everybody's like, yeah, you know, but
right
inside, yeah, on the inside, man, I'm breaking. For real.
Yeah, that's real.
Yeah.
How do you all feel like your relationship to audience is different now?
I haven't performed in front of an audience yet.
Well, I just did these three shows. I literally just came back yesterday. And to be honest, I didn't even look at them. Okay. The first show. Yeah, I looked a little bit because it was in Minneapolis. And just as we were getting ready and setting up, the police there shot a man and killed him, you know? So it was this kind of mood, you know, so that was like the space I was in was really, you know, driving me to a certain way. But I didn't look at them like it was like unsound, you know, it was more like do better. You know what I mean? Like no one is safe. This kind of directness that Jalen was saying, like it was more like that than Chicago and Missouri. I didn't really look at the audience much. I'm kind of just, you know, it's like my first three gigs back. I'm kind of into my own self, you know? What do I like? What am I trying to say? You know?
Yeah,
that's where I was at. So I just know that I want the audience to just be a little bit more conscious of all that we have to go through, you know, and how we're definitely trying to be safe. You know, we love that you love the music and support and come to the show. Absolutely. But, you know, it's got to be a way that we negotiate this space. Also promoters, you know, like I said, these shows were outside. It was very easy. But, you know, it's only going to get into the thick of things. But I'm taking it easy. I advise all artists to take it as easy as they want, you know?
Yeah.
No rush.
Yeah.
Prioritizing self-preservation.
Absolutely. 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 Yeah, we're doing, I think a lot of artists are going to do it different now. Yeah. They're going to have to. Because if you want to survive this, if you want to keep your sanity, you will. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like we've talked quite a lot. I don't want to take up more of your time, but this was a really great conversation. I'm really glad that you both were able to connect with one another, and that, you know, I was able to connect with you both as well.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, of course, the world knows, but I love Jalen. the utmost respect, because like I said when we started, we are out here,
man,
you know, and it's not just some statue, whatever. We're delicate, we're strong, you know what I mean? We're going through the changes, you know, and we are inspiring a lot of people. And I think sometimes as artists, especially as Black women, we need to sit back and be like, you know, take that in, that we inspired so much, and work together to demand that respect, especially when it comes to, we said self-preservation and we was like laughing because it's like real, but all of our heroes have been leading these lives of examples, you know, whether it's horrific, whether it's beautiful, like Marshall Allen just celebrated 90, you know, making it past 90, but it's like these stories are so rich.
Right.
You know, there's no kind of this, you know, there's no kind of podcast. We have these lives that are real lived lives.
Yeah.
You know, real,
super and, rich, like they're lush, yeah. And that, you know, there's so much that goes in it. The triumphs, the falls, the horrors of being Black in this world. It's a lot. And then in the midst of that, still creating for the world. That's beating us down, you know. It's
right.
Yes, yeah, it's real, you know. So that's why I just says I get you, like for real, like talk about in the trenches, man.
Yeah. For real, actually, but yes.
Actually, Jalen, I had like one more question for you. Just you know, Kameh had mentioned, you know, like just obviously there's a rich tradition and legacy of Black classical music, but you have also, you know, over the years, you're really being embraced by Western classical music.
Yeah.
And you are a Black woman, and that space has been like very exclusionary of Black women. And, you know, like what how is that for you? You know, cause,
okay. I had to think before I said that out loud. for me, it has been, I would say it's about time. I mean, it's just time. It's just time right now. Honestly, it is. It's just time. I feel like just being one of the reasons I chose, like I, one of my, the title for myself was like, if you see, like even my email, like Jalen the Innovator, is because I chose that because I am a descendant who has stood on the shoulders of so many innovators. And as a, you know, as a Black artist, as a Black woman, not just in my career, but just in, you know, in so many other ways. And it's just time, you know. And I'm very, very, very grateful to be embraced in classical music. Because I love classical music, I really do. And I love the way, for an example, I found some old clips of Igor Stravinsky doing rehearsals, and it just fascinated me because he used to take so long to prepare before he actually went into an actual rehearsal with everybody playing at the same time. He went through every instrument, that could be 60 to 80 people, and to make sure every instrument was tuned to, you know, where it needed to be. And that kind of, you know, to me, I think that's, you know, brilliant. And sometimes for me in my work, what would somebody be like, you know, might like, yeah, I'll take the easy way out. For me, there are some parts of my work that are very difficult, you know, and I have to take It's like I have to go the extra length. So it's, you know, it's cool. You know, I have to go the extra length and do that. And it's, I don't mind being that. So, yeah.
Great. Thank you both so much. Just for making time and putting some energy towards this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.